The conflict in Yemen is taking a terrible toll on civilians who are caught in the crossfire. A civil war started there in 2014. Today in Yemen, much like in Syria, the fighting has turned into a proxy war involving other countries on opposite sides. The U.S. backs a coalition led by Saudi Arabia. It's trying to oust rebels known as Houthis. The Houthis are backed by Iran. David Miliband has seen all of this up close. He's president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee. David Miliband, you were just in Yemen 2 weeks ago. What did you see there?
I mean, Yemen is the world's largest humanitarian crisis. This is a country of 28 million people. 8 million people are being fed by the UN World Food Programme every day. It's a country where 3.5 million people are on the brink of famine and where 83% of the population are in extreme poverty. And the temptation is to describe this as a tragedy. In fact, it's an indictment because this is not a natural catastrophe. It's a man-made trauma that is the result of a war that has been waged over the last 3.5 years with neither side winning.
And I want to ask you about that war because there are lots of people who want to pay attention to what's happening in Yemen. It feels very remote. It's very complicated as well. Could you describe in your own words what this is all about?
Yeah. I mean, Yemen's conflict goes to the heart of the trauma that is going across the Middle East at the moment. The government of Yemen was toppled in 2014 by a Houthi coup. The Houthis are a group from the north of the country, socioeconomically deprived. They rolled over the then government and captured 70% of the country. And what's happened since then is that a Saudi-led coalition with US support, also UK, other European support, so it's not that far from home because the US is very strongly implicated in this, a Saudi-led coalition has been trying to topple the Yemeni control of the capital, Sana'a, and of 70% of the country. The truth is that 18,000 bombing raids that have been led by the Saudi-led coalition have not shifted the front lines. 70 to 80% of the humanitarian and commercial traffic goes through the port of Hodeidah, which is currently choked, really, by the fighting. Only a trickle of aid and commercial traffic is getting through. And what's happening in Yemen is that that conflict between the Houthis and the Saudi-led coalition has brought in the Iranians, who are supporting the Houthis.
But in other words, they're on the other side from the Saudis, the US, and the UK.
Exactly. So immediately you have a theological split, Sunni versus Shia. You also have a split of intra-regional power struggle. But in the chaos, other groups are emerging, separatist groups in the south, Al-Qaeda of the Arabian Peninsula in the east, ISIS growing as well. And my case, the case that I saw with my own eyes, is that this is a humanitarian catastrophe. The levels of malnutrition are absolutely shocking in that country. There are children literally starving to death. But at the same time, there is a political emergency too, because the only side that is gaining from the current stalemate are the extremists of Al-Qaeda and ISIS. And it's a country now which is on the verge of meltdown, not just humanitarian meltdown, but political meltdown.
And what does that mean?
It means that the humanitarian meltdown is that 3.5 million people are on the verge of famine. 40,000 children are waiting for hospital places in Yemen. There isn't the fuel to support the hospitals. There isn't the fuel for the cars. You can see half-a-mile queues at gas stations on the road. You've got teachers and doctors and nurses who are not being paid because public sector salaries are not being paid. It's a country which can't sustain itself at the moment. It's being ravaged by a war that is not to the benefit of any of the sides who are waging it, but is in fact being exploited by extremists. And I think that the onus on the permanent members of the Security Council, including the US and the UK, is to recognize that this crisis is to no one's benefit. The war is not being won. And the only way to address both the humanitarian and the political emergency is a ceasefire. When in a hole, stop digging. And that's the message that needs to go to the Saudi-led coalition.
So hold on right there for a second. What is it that the Saudis, the UK, the US, and the others want? What's their goal?
Their goal is, first of all, to roll back Houthi influence, which they see as being allied to the Iranians. Secondly, to reestablish what they call the legitimate government that was in place before the 2014 coup. And thirdly, and importantly for Saudi Arabia, they want to be secure from missiles being sent from Yemen into Saudi Arabia. And there's no question that the Houthis have launched missiles into Saudi Arabia, so there are legitimate security concerns. But what I saw was that the price being paid by the Yemeni people far outweighed the costs that were being imposed on the other side.
We should say that U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo says the coalition is taking steps to minimize civilian casualties.
And that obviously sticks in the gullet, because I met Yemenis who told me about missiles that had landed on a hospital next to a healthcare center that we were delivering. And they all know about the fact that the Saudis bombed a coach of school children, more than 40 of them killed, in August. The Secretary of State, the U.S. Secretary of State, Mike Pompeo, has indeed certified, as he's required to by congressional legislation, that everything is being done to protect civilians.
But we know
that 7,500 civilians have been directly killed, never mind the indirect effects on far larger numbers.
And why would the U.S. not want to protect civilians? Why would the U.K. and even Saudi Arabia? I mean, why would that not be a priority?
I'm not casting any ad hominem judgment. What I'm saying is that the fact is that civilians are not being protected. And the conduct of the war has breached the most basic norms of international humanitarian law, both on the Saudi-led coalition side and on the Houthi side. Independent UN inquiries have produced extensive documentation of terrible breaches of international humanitarian law, in other words, the targeting of civilians by both sides. And this is a crisis that now I came away saying that the world needs to wake up to what's going on in Yemen. And the tragedy is, at the UN General Assembly, there was no all-night session of the UN Security Council on Yemen. The UK holds the pen on the Yemen file, but the pen needs to be picked up, because there is not a current debate to replace the failed UN Security Council resolution of 2015 with something that is actually a route map to peace rather than a carte blanche for war.
If we take the issue of refugees, which obviously the IRC focuses on, to the U.S. and directly to Washington, you have said that regarding help from the Western world, that you've moved from a relatively benign climate to a relatively hostile one. We know the Trump administration has cut by 75% the number of refugees it admits into this country every year. How does that affect your work?
Well, just for the benefit of your listeners, there are about 28 million refugees and asylum seekers around the world today. Most of them are in poor countries, not rich countries. Countries like Jordan and Lebanon, countries like Kenya, Ethiopia, Uganda, countries like Bangladesh. Historically, for the most vulnerable refugees, widows, victims of torture, or orphaned children, the U.S. has stepped up and been a leader in what's called refugee resettlement, which means bringing, on average, about 90,000 refugees a year to the U.S. Actually, under the Reagan administration, it was over 200,000. And those people go on to become productive members of American society. The Trump administration has, first of all, changed the security vetting arrangements. They wanted to update them. That's legitimate for any government to do. But they've also reduced by 75% the cap on the number of refugees who are allowed into the U.S. And that obviously means that individual lives are affected. There are 50,000 Iraqis who've supported the work of the U.S. military and government in Iraq, translators and things. They're not being allowed into the country either. So there are individual stories of people who fear for their own lives, who can't now start a new life
in the U.S. Who worked on behalf of the U.S., which is part of the reason they're in trouble.
Exactly. They're being targeted because of their support for the U.S. They're not being allowed in either. So you've got this clampdown on refugees who are fleeing for their lives, clampdown on people who would claim refugee status because of their work for the U.S. government. And the great danger is that a bipartisan program of proven success, remember, refugees contribute more to the American economy than they take out in welfare payments, a proven program is being strangled. And this year, we are having to deal with the fact that there was a historic low in the number of refugees allowed in, only 21,000 in the fiscal year that ended on September the 30th. The Trump administration has set a ceiling of 30,000 for this fiscal year, which started on October the 1st. And so what we see is not just the effect on individual lives of those who would have come here. There's also the fact that countries around the world are seeing that the U.S. doesn't have their back. Let me give you an example. Jordan, the second closest ally of the United States in the Middle East, it's dealing with 650,000 registered refugees from Syria. It's dependent on support from the outside world, but it also wants countries like America to stand with it. It wants to be able to say to its own people, look, America standing with us in dealing with this Syrian refugee crisis, so we've got to continue to stand up ourselves. The King of Jordan says his country's at breaking point. And so since we operate both as a refugee resettlement agency here, but also an international humanitarian aid agency in countries like Jordan and Lebanon, we can see the impact on American influence and American reputation.
So just put a finer point on that. You're saying that you can see the impact on the ground in a place like Jordan, an American ally, of the Trump administration reducing by 75% the number of refugees who can come to this country.
Yes, because you know that the number of Syrians who were allowed in last fiscal year was only around 40. And that is felt as a poke in the eye by countries that are hosting very large numbers of refugees. No one's saying a large proportion of the 28 million refugees and asylum seekers should be coming to the US, but that show of standing in solidarity with countries that are hosting refugees so that the most vulnerable get a chance to start a new life is something that's been a core part of the American foreign policy tradition for a long time. And it would be a real tragedy if it was to be lost completely.
David Miliband, thank you.
Thank you.
David Miliband is president and CEO of the International Rescue Committee.